Welcome to Equestrian Movement's Best Do No Harm podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boniface, co-founder of Equestrian Movement with Sarah Gallagher. We work with horse riders who want to build a stronger bond and a deeper connection with their horses. In our first Do No Harm podcast, we discuss with other industry professionals how to work with horses to firstly do no harm and secondly support their mental, emotional and physical well-being throughout the training process, so that we have horses that enjoy learning and ask to be ridden. Each episode, we discuss the different influences our training can have and how we can improve our horses' overall athleticism, soundness of mind and body, and emotional fortitude, while strengthening and deepening our relationship with our horses. Each week, I will endeavour to bring to you a new episode on horse riding, training, handling and husbandry, or an interview with other industry professionals to help you address where and why you might get stuck in creating the beautiful union of dancing souls that is the equestrian sport. Are you ready to kick off today's show? Let's get started. Hey team, Katie here from Equestrian Movement, and today I'm excited to share with you the conversation that I had with Kate McGurley. Kate McGurley is a PEMF certified trained practitioner, and you can see her work over at Smiling Horse LLC. PEMF, or Pulse Electromagnetic Field, is therapy in waveform. It has the same benefits as shockwave, the TENS unit, and others. However, it's absolutely painless, penetrates bone, and goes up to 16 inches deep, unlike these therapy modalities. PEMF makes the cell walls more permeable, can cause better absorption of nutrients and medication, addresses ulcers, reduces pain and inflammation, increases blood oxygenation for better healing and circulation, hits acupuncture points, helps the body recover completely naturally, recharges low energy cells so that can perform, so they can function fully again, and can reduce tendon and ligament problems, neurological issues, sore muscles and joints, and more. I was particularly interested to talk to Kate about PEMF, and as usual, we also go down our standard rabbit holes around training, our concerns for the state of the equine industry, and the common problems that we see people struggling with their horses, and how we've found we personally have overcome them. I hope you enjoy today's episode just as much as I did with talking to Kate. You can check out her work over at Smiling Horse LLC. I'll put all the links in the show notes. Without further ado, let's kick off today's show. Hey team, Katie here from Equestrian Movement, and I'm so excited to be introducing you to Kate McGurley from Smiling Horse LLC. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yes, that is correct.
Kate, would you be able to introduce yourself and tell our audience a little bit about what you do?
Absolutely. Hi everyone, my name is Kate McGurley. I am in Louisiana. Actually, I'm north part of Louisiana. I train horses a little bit, and I've kind of gravitated more towards the more holistic side of things. I do PEMF therapy, which is a machine that I use that can handle a lot of the horse's compensation patterns, any pain in the body. It can just kind of help the horse feel more comfortable in ease in his own body, and therefore he could do better as a competition horse or even just a horse in the pasture. My heart really is, I love training. I love seeing horses grow, and I love seeing horses feel their best.
Yeah, so good. I love that. I saw the PEMF therapy kind of come up, I don't know, maybe like 10 or 15 years ago, and I've kind of been watching it, and initially I thought it was just going to be a fad that would drop off, but it's like hanging in there, so there must be some really good therapeutic advantages to using it, right?
Yes. I mean, I've used it on myself too, and seen such a difference in my own body. Like obviously this applies to horses, but I love to use it on people as well, so they understand exactly what's going on in their horse's body. Like I have really bad SI pain, and it really restricts my body, And that prevents me from riding my horse as well. And of course, that can be a whole thing, creating compensation patterns because of your own just tension in your body. And so it really helps me handle a lot of that. So dealing with my own compensation patterns is going to help my horses. So feeling the pain relief for myself is just really, really is what kind of persuaded me, because I went through training online and then bought the machine. I really didn't have too much experience with it. And so a lot of it for me was just, oh my God, this really works, you know, and just seeing other people be like, oh my God, this really works. And you can see he has such a huge difference in the horses and their attitudes and demeanors. And, you know, I love hearing from clients, oh my God, he was amazing today. Or he was so much better today. Or all of a sudden he was just able to move freely to the right shoulder. And it's just like all those lovely things that just make me so happy to hear.
Yeah, for sure. That is so beautiful. And that's what we're about as well. So obviously the name of our podcast is First Do No Harm. And so we're working from the philosophy that you're not going to fix a pain-related behavior without fixing the pain first. So I know that the way that you do the work with the horses and the way that you do training, you're not able to fix a behavior that's associated to pain. You might be able to like shut your horse down or, you know, push them through it, but that you know, tension holding pattern within the body over a period of time becomes like a severe deterioration of the body's function as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so hard to navigate as well, because I think it's super common in the horse world to, at least for me growing up, this is where it kind of came from for me, is I was basically told that I was weak or scared or whatever, couldn't ride if I couldn't push a horse through certain behaviors, or and even when I did, I was seen as good or tough or gritty, or it was all these lovely things that I was so craving from my trainer who I really cared about. It's such a reinforcer of the opposite things, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I have the same experience. It wasn't necessarily that my coaches were pushing me to push the horse through the behavior. It was just that there wasn't any other option, you know, like 30 years ago, we weren't even saddle fitting at that point, you know, there wasn't even saddle fitters. I think like maybe by the time I was 12, there was a local chiropractor, who knows if they were any good or not, but they worked on my horse. And we didn't have like body workers. And then, you know, the maintenance of my horse was like annual vet visit at the pony club, where they had to sedate my horse to be able to handle it, and then they'd do his teeth and vaccinations and everything, and that was like that was his care.
Wow. That's wild.
It's the industry has changed so much now that we can understand what the horse is experiencing a lot more, and that a lot of those problems, like a good reason for my horse to be bucking me off could have been that he was in pain that I didn't know about. And it was like, well, the only option I had was to suck it up and cowgirl through it and just sit it. And like that in itself personally was beneficial to me, because then I got a lot less scared, because I wasn't scared of getting bucked off, even if the horse was like having a little root around in play. But it's nice how much we have available to us to actually make sure that our horse is feeling good in their body now. But it's such a minefield to navigate and try and like problem solve if we're seeing like a sticking point with our horse, to try and figure out how, like, what exactly is going on in them.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think so much. So much of it now is people do really care, you know, and these owners, they do really care about their horses, and it is a minefield having to navigate, okay, what's pain, what could be potentially behavioral, you know, like, and then of course everybody and their mom has an opinion about it.
Yes.
it's so difficult. And I think this is where, and who knows your horse more than your vet, more than your farrier, more than anyone else, and you have to be your horse's advocate. And I think we downplay that because we're not an expert on, we're not a vet, or we're not the farrier, we're not the industry professionals as far as that avenue of care, but we do know our horses. And I think that is also something that should not be looked over. I mean, I've been in a position where I knew I had this mare, and I knew she had EPM. Now, she didn't have all the telltale signs, but I just knew something was off this mare. She gave me 200% every time I rode her. She was just brilliant. And I took her to the vet, and I was like, look, I think this horse has EPM. Like, she's not having all the signs, but I think she has EPM. They were like, no, let's just go ahead. She doesn't really show any of the signs. They like pulled her tail, did a neurological exam. She's like, she's not really showing any signs. I spent $3,000 on injections, electroacupuncture, we did her SI, stifles, everything. And nothing happened after that. I was like, oh my God, something's wrong. I don't know what's going on. Brought her to another vet. Turns out she had extremely high titers for EPM, and she did have EPM. And so that's my my navigating a minefield story. It's just like, sometimes you have to go with, I know my horse, this is what I'm seeing. And you have to kind of dig through it sometimes, and it's difficult.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we have to do it all the time. And we just had that recently as well. Like, we've got school horses, so it's vital that they're in their peak athletic, like, potential and health to be doing the workload that they're doing. And I was noticing with one of our, like, you know, one of our really good school horses that starts all the beginners, he was starting to get this thing where his ear would just, like, kind of flick or twitch when he was traveling to the right. And it's so subtle that you could easily miss it, but it's an unusual behavior to him. And normally when you see that ear, like, kind of, you know, unconsciously or unintentionally flick like that, it's like a pain-related behavior. Mm-hmm. So I was watching him, and I was like, all right, you know, I've been seeing this for a week now. Now I'm seeing it for 2 weeks. It's something that's going on where there is something underlying that I need to address. And I thought that maybe it would be like muscle related. So we got a body worker in, and she was like, there's nothing wrong with this horse. He's like in the best shape ever. I was like, oh, that doesn't help me.
Yeah.
So I've been doing all of these conditioning exercises and whatnot. And I just so happened to be experimenting with a different farrier, and I wanted him to get done by her because sometimes he can go a little bit hoof sore after he gets a trim. And she found, you know, thrush in his hooves, which is, you know, often bizarre when we're in really dry weather, but I've been reading up about it, and you can get the dry rot where the hoof isn't getting cleaned out properly, and so it was like underneath his top layer, so you couldn't like really see it, and it was like going quite deep into the hoof just on that right hoof. And so my farrier is, I really trust him. I've worked with him for nearly 20 years, and he has kept our horses sound and in good condition. And he just happened to miss this particular thing, and without using a different farrier, I wouldn't have known, and I would have been like chasing my tail trying to find all of the other muscle issues that I was looking for.
Yeah, it's challenging, and that too is just like navigating between professionals. Is like, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings involved as well, but I think that's where it also goes back to, like, you have to just do what's best for your horse. Your horse's advocate. And if you're wrong, you're wrong. But if you're right, you're right. You know what I mean? Like, and just having the peace, I guess, to navigate that is sometimes difficult.
Yeah, for sure. It's, one of the things that we talk about, because I'm also qualified as a naturopath, it's like one of the things that we talk about with, moms is that they can say, like, doctors really struggle with dealing with mums because they can be like overthink everything. But it's like, when you're living there with them all the time, you can see what's like uncharacteristic of them. And so that's what we're looking for in our horses is that we spend so much time with them that we can see something that's slightly out of their nature or uncharacteristic to them. And so then if you're your vet or your boy work or whoever you're working with is saying no, there's nothing wrong with that, or your trainer, then you really have to start shopping around and seeing if you can find somebody that can say, yeah, I hear that, and like, this is how I can support you.
Yes. And it's so hard because, I mean, it's pricey. It takes an emotional toll on you.
Oh,
and it's,
sure.
You know, it's difficult.
Especially if you have to go down a rabbit hole with, like, you know, you're going to basically not be able to ride your horse again. We have one of our students that went through, like, all of our holistic horse handling program. And normally if you go through that, like, your horse will be, like, consenting, engaged and willing and, you know, actively participating in their training. And this horse in particular was still very reactive and still very threatened with her approaching. And so she ended up digging deeper and found that the horse actually had a fractured neck that had calcified as well. So that horse would have been in extreme pain. And she ended up finding out that that happened and retired. It got retired from racing and just, like, you know, sold on basically as a horse for somebody else to ride, like, without anybody, you know, maybe that wasn't diagnosed at the time, or it can just be, you know, people getting rid of their problem. And just we have a lot of problems with that here in Australia, is like, we have a lot of racehorses that just get flipped to naive people, and they get drugged. So you think that they're quiet, but they're just drugged. And so then you kind of have all of this, like, you think you're buying a perfect horse and you take it home and it just, like, gets wild on you. And then you realize that there's all of these injuries from its racing career that you don't know about.
Yes. That's a whole hard thing to navigate right there. Yeah. It's just
a whole other especially
when it's people who don't know any better in the main market, you know. It's, I mean, I understand how fresh it must be for people who just don't know. You know, that's hard.
Yeah, definitely. So one of the things that you were sharing on your Instagram account, I've got a few that I really enjoy that you talk about. So you were recently talking about when you're doing your horse training that to speed up, you actually have to slow down first. And this is, like, a lot of what we have built the foundations of what we do on, because my partner's mum is she's a childcare worker, but she works for children that live in abusive families and whatnot. And so these kids can't integrate into a normal school because they can't sit down and learn. And so this idea is that if you're experiencing, you know, trauma at home, if you're experiencing, and I'm absolutely going to butcher this because I don't have the papers in front of me, but if you're experiencing, you know, trauma or neglect at home and it has you in that flight, fight or freeze mindset, then you can't actually learn. And it takes up to, I think she was saying it's like takes up to 6 hours for them to come out of that part of their brain and to be able to come into the part of their brain where they can start learning. And that's a really long time, right? Like to have that point of reactivity where you feel threatened before you can find that felt sense of safety again, to be able to be in a place where you can actively learn. Like, that's a really long time to shift mental states. And it's something that I was seeing a lot of in training and horse behavior, is that if we're trying to, you know, force reactivity through pressure release, the horses don't actually learn. They learn a response that you want in that moment to that cue. But then when it comes to learning a new cue, it's like you have to start all over again, because there's no process for the horse to follow to understand that they should be seeking a behavior for us, that we're trying to like find a linking cue to be able to get them to experiment with different behaviors until they find the one that we're looking for. And that can be a big problem in training as well, is that we're not giving the horse permission to experiment with some answers. We're just like punishing them for not having the right answer.
And I think too is just like the horse can't retain any information so long as he's just in fight or flight freeze mode, or even if he's just, you know, been around people his whole life and, you know, they haven't really done much with him. I mean, I work with several horses that have had the most pampered life you can imagine. I mean, they're so well taken care of, but they're so used to humans that they almost don't register that there's a purpose to what is going on in the relationship. You know what I mean? And it's case by case. It's every horse is so different. You know, I have my thoroughbred Finn, who was extremely reactive. He was abused on the racetrack and he had the most amazing owner, such a sweet, wonderful lady. It was unknown to her what was going on with him. And thank God for her, because she's the one that brought him home and retired him when she knew the first thing something was up. But I mean, with him, he's so future minded, I like to call it, because he's so just not present. He's not present enough, and that's the doing of people. Horses are the definition of present, they're the definition of honest. And having to kind of refocus him is very different than having to refocus a horse who's just, you know, I'm just used to people. For him, it's I have to be way more gentle, way more backed off. He notices the littlest things that I do way quicker than, say, a horse who's just used to people. With the horse that's just used to people, I kind of have to over exaggerate. I'm still going slow, but I'm more over exaggerating what I'm asking, because I have to kind of help them learn to process that I have questions for him, you know. And whereas like Finn, he's just so stuck in a fight or flight mode, it's really challenging to break that down, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. It's very, I had that with, as I was telling you about my third horse, King. He came out of a very abusive experience from when he was on the rodeo circuit, and we didn't realize that he was on the rodeo circuit. And he was my first experience for what wired trauma looks like. And now when I'm working with horses, you can kind of see where their personality would sit if they hadn't experienced a trauma to begin with, versus, you know, these horses that have experienced that trauma. It rewires them to always see threat and always be looking for an escape route. Like, even after we've never shown them any harm and we've done everything that we can to like make them feel safe with us, they never fully relax and trust and have confidence that the human is not just going to turn around and turn evil one day. Trying to rewire that nervous system is really challenging, because you don't do it with training, and you definitely don't do it with pressure release training.
You're really
looking for how you can bring that felt sense of safety into your relationship with the horse, which initially looks like not asking them to do anything. It's safe in my space. Like, you're safe here with me. And then from there, maybe we can start asking them to do things. But until you have that like felt sense of safety in relationship to just even one human, you're not going to be able to progress with the training without the horse just like flipping out and, you know, doing stupid things to pressure, because they are instantly tripped up into that flight response and that self-protection response.
You know, and horses that are like that, it's I've found that positive reinforcement is such a game changer for these guys, because they've already experienced so much horrible things. You know, you're just trying to show them that not everything is a negative experience. And it's very hard these days because you have these two hard sides of strictly positive reinforcement, and then you have the hard side of like the traditional training.
Yeah.
And it's difficult to navigate because I think a lot of us really do want what's best for our horses, but there's these black and white sides to things, when in reality so much of it is gray. You know, you have the horses that that do respond a little bit better to a more clear and precise pressure and release, and then you have horses like these guys we're talking about that are just so far blown up that if you were to use positive, I mean, if you were to use traditional pressure and release, it wouldn't get anywhere with them. You would have an even more explosive, dangerous, hard to handle horse on your hands, and they're dangerous themselves at that point. And you have to do what's ethical for them. And you know, again, like you were just saying, you're not going to do it with training. You're not going to do it with anything except for being there for them and just showing them that there's positive experiences, that not everything is terrifying, not everything is going to be a battle. And I think a lot of those horses, really deep down, I think the main root to all of it is just feeling extremely insecure. And so if you can see that, you know, a lot of really insecure horses only respond the best to positive reinforcement. And when you can address the insecurity and instead build confidence by rewarding curiosity and then making it a game with a lot of the positive reinforcement stuff, that really helps. It breaks them open. You know, they start coming out of their shell. And I think that's just the kind of the way to their heart. And in that regard, especially just specifically for horses that have gone through a lot of trauma.
Yeah, agreed. So it is that something that we teach. It's actually really interesting that you can't be in a state of fear and a state of curiosity at the same time. You can be curious and something happens and you startle and you're in a state of fear. But the act of being curious takes you out of that state of fear. So even like within yourself, if you're feeling anxious about doing something with your horse, if you get curious about your own anxiety, it can take you out of that fear response and make you more relaxed around the horse in and of itself. And so that is what we teach as well, where we don't teach desensitization so much, because you can see in the desensitization process where a lot of horses just get tripped up into freeze, and then you're conditioning a freeze response to the thing that they feel scared of. We teach confidence through curiosity. We actually have we are about to bring all our Halloween toys out because we're coming into Halloween. it's so much fun to see the horses, how they engage with these novel stimuli, where they're like, what is that? And
yeah,
the most terrifying of our Halloween obstacles is the bubble machine. So they're okay with like the mummy crawling along the ground and the zombie shaking in his chains and the ghoul like popping his head up and all these things, but that bubble machine, as soon as a bubble pops on them, like, no friend, this is not my jam.
That's hilarious.
Well, I recently got, you know, those inflatable unicorn costumes.
Yes.
I recently got one of those and went down into the herd with that on, and they're like, what the hell? The only horse that was like, oh, it's just the crazy human being crazy again, was my horse. He was just like watching me still eating the hay. All the other horses were like, oh my god, what is this? And you take like the unicorn head off and like, oh my god, it was you all along. How, what? Put it back on and blow it up again, and they're like, oh my god, where did you go? Wild unicorn again.
That's so funny.
So we try and encourage, one of the things that I was like, you know, when we first started doing our like relationship workshops, was like, I don't know if I can ever get a horse to be okay with a pig, because they have such a strong instinct with the smell of pigs and boars to like go into that threat response. And we did our confidence through curiosity with the neighbors' horse, who had just like moved into their place, and they had their pig, and someone was like terrified of the pig. And so we did introduce targeting to him, and then did the confidence through curiosity to the pig. And I was like, and then he was good. He was like, oh yeah, I can live with my new pig sister now. I was like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it that's so it's just so simple. You know, I think when we are, the only tool we have in our belt is only positive reinforcement. I mean, it's only pressure and release. It can be difficult when we do have to kind of switch it up for horses that are having fear responses. Because I think a lot of the times we grow up thinking, oh, he's just being dumb. He's just, yeah. You know, he's just whatever, whatever. But the reality is that to that horse, that is a very genuine feeling, and he genuinely feels unsafe. And that's why we have to put ourselves in his shoes. And, you know, how would I react if I was genuinely scared and somebody was forcing me to do something? And there's a balance, you know, like there's a balance of we obviously have to learn and grow, and staying the same is not the route to go. We have to learn and grow. So there is some pressures, but not all of it is force. You know, force and pressure are very different things, you know?
Yeah. The worst thing that you can do for fear is to push. You need to like allow them to take their own step within their own time and process their own fear.
Mm-hmm.
And find some skills to navigate that. Actually, we also have another fun trick that I was practicing with the kids yesterday, because we've been doing like our upward and downward transitions on the buckle so they can learn how to do the seat. And sometimes like what I'll see is, actually I was learning this because I've been working with a student that's got PTSD, and so as soon as she started to get a little bit of fear in the saddle, she'd dissociate. And the whole lower back freezes and it rotates the pelvis forward. It like locks you into that fear mechanism where you're in flight. And she had to like use all of, you know, the tools that her psychologist had given her to be able to pull herself back into her body, which means going through, you know, her trauma and reliving her trauma experience every time she tried to pull herself back in. So thankfully she has a psychologist to help her through all of that, because that's not my skill set. But she was like, no, I want to do this. Like, this is going to be good for me. I was like, cool, I can facilitate this. Every time she would freeze and dissociate, the horses would just refuse to move. And before I understood what was going on, I was like, I don't know why my horses want to work for you, but I can't just up the pressure for them, because we're going to end up with them just, you know, being super resistant. And, you know, one horse will get really stubborn and refuse to move. The other horse will get really anxious and he's like, hindquarters will start swinging around. You know, my other horse will shut down and he'll stop engaging. Like, I don't know why this is a problem with the, like, what's going on here. And so then we like into all of that. And so we've been working on her pulling herself back into her body and like breathing into her lower back to like relax that tension out of the lower part of her spine. And so I've been able to like transfer that across to some of the students when they get stuck trying to get that downward transition, and getting them to like soften their lower back and breathe into their lower back to like roll into that downward transition. And humming is like, I always forget how good of a tool humming is. Like, I use it personally when I'm anxious around a horse, because I'm like, this horse is might throw me off.
So
it's really hard to override your own nervous system's fear of threat and survival mechanism, and humming will do it every single time. When I used to work at the health food store, the guy that ran it would come in like a hurricane and everybody would be like on their toes and super anxious. I was like, I can't function up there because I can't think clearly, and that's when I make mistakes. So I'm just gonna hum every time you're in my presence. Yes, I look like a weirdo, but I'm self-soothing and I am down-regulating, and I will be able to function. And it's really good, because like as soon as the kids started humming, they were able to like let go of their lower back and like roll into that downward transition through their seat without having to pick the reins up.
Wow. Wow, that's even refreshing just for me to hear too, like just me hearing that now from you. And that's really cool that you're teaching these kids this, because, you know, I did not grow up that way at all. I'm sure your story's the same as you know, you ride horses through it, or you're not tough enough, or you know, having somebody there with the patience and the self-awareness to you know, help somebody through their very real trauma Yeah. Is just a breath of fresh air to hear, honestly, because that's it's rare. You don't hear that all the time. You hear a lot of the negative, and to hear something positive like that is really refreshing.
That's it for us today. Join us next week for part two of this conversation. I'll link up all of the links in the show notes, and until next week, happy trails. If you're loving what you're listening to on the podcast, you might be starting to recognize that trying to control your horse through submission-based training is the worst way to ask your horse to look after you. If you're working with or riding horses, you know how unpredictable and sometimes scary they can be. Unfortunately, most struggling horse riders make the mistake of thinking they can physically control their 400 plus kilo fur babies by moving their feet or spooking them into responding with flags and join up. Without giving your horse a reason to care about you and look after you, you will most likely end up with a horse that is disconnected at best, shut down or explosive at worst, because they can't communicate their needs with you, especially if you are already scared, worried or nervous handling your horse. That's why we've created our new free online training experience, Building a Connection with Your Horse. This is how I've gone about creating safe horses for beginners, no matter the breed or previous handling experiences. If you want to learn the secret sauce behind developing safe horses that care about you and look after you without trauma-triggering training methods, register for our new training today at www.equestrianmovement.com/connection. And I will uncover the three big mistakes you might be making if you're trying to build a relationship with your horse, and how you can start building your horse's trust and confidence in you as a leader worth following.